Hello and welcome to the Linda for the Albany Mayoral Forum on Sustainability, hosted by WAMC Northeast Public Radio and the New York League of Conservation Voters. I'm Alan Chartok, along with my fellow moderator, Marcia Bistron, New York League of Conservation Voters Education Fund President. Because we're limited to an hour and have a full panel of mayoral candidates to hear from, we will begin momentarily. A word on the format. Questions will be asked of candidates randomly, at which time they will have 2 minutes to respond. Other candidates will then be able to respond to the original question for 1 minute. Should they choose to do so, we will be watching the clock. Some of today's topics have been submitted by the public. All officially declared candidates for mayor were invited to partake in today's live debate, and we're delighted that many have accepted.
Before we begin, we'd like to recognize several area organizations that have partnered with us to make this forum a success: Albany Votes, A Village Inc., Capital District Community Gardens, Council of Albany Neighborhood Associations, Empire State Future, Historic Albany Foundation, League of Women Voters of Albany County, Parks and Trails New York, Preservation League of New York State, the Radix Ecological Sustainability Center, Transition Albany, and U Albany Green Screen.
And now it's time to meet the candidates. Marlon Anderson is running as an independent Democrat, a community activist. Anderson campaigned as a write-in candidate in 2009.
Jesse Calhoun is known for his involvement in Occupy Albany. He is running for mayor as a Republican and hosts a radio show in addition to working at a children's daycare center.
And Corey Ellis nearly defeated Albany Mayor Jerry Jennings in the 2009 Democratic primary. A community organizer, Ellis has served on the Albany Common Council and the New York State Democratic Committee.
Kathy Sheehan currently serves as Albany's treasurer and chief fiscal officer and is a member of Albany's Industrial Development Agency. She is an attorney.
And Joseph Sullivan is running as a conservative and has previously run for the Assembly, Congress, and the county legislature. He refers to himself as the Lone Ranger of Albany. Thanks, everybody, for being here. Marcia, would you like to ask the first question?
Yes, I would. Jesse, what are your priorities for increasing public access to open space here in Albany?
As far as public access goes, I think community gardens are a great asset to our community. I think we could use more of them. And basically anything that can increase our local food independence and green spaces is very much a priority to me.
Any comments from others?
Okay, well, that's good. We're ahead of the game. Thank you for that. And so I'll ask the second question. We would love, of course, for the panel to take up the answers to the question that was first proposed to one of the candidates. Okay, Joe Sullivan, you've been a longtime looker at the Albany scene. And so I guess I want to ask you, about transportation? What are your sense of sustainability and transportation, and how do they go together?
Well, I think it's very important, excuse me, Alan, that we take a look at building some light rail connections from the suburbs to the cities. And also within the cities, I wouldn't be surprised if one day Albany returns to having a trolley system like it used to have. So I think those are a couple of needs. We have to crack down on speeding traffic. As mayor, I would issue a proclamation that the city speed limits will be strictly enforced in residential neighborhoods. And same thing for running red lights and stop signs, which are real problems in this city.
Corey Ellis, I see you shaking your head. Do you have any response to this?
Yes, I do agree when it comes to enforcement, making our city safer with the number of speeding cars we do have. And we have to put together a comprehensive plan in different neighborhoods and really study the traffic patterns. And once we study those traffic patterns, we really have to enforce our laws that exist. Too many times in our neighborhoods, we get many, many complaints about speeding cars. And I think once we begin the process of enforcing those laws, I think we'll send a message that our city is a place where our residential people really needs to be the priority rather than just a car speeding down the road.
Marlon?
Yes. Before I rebut that point, I just want to make a clarification of something that I think that needs to be said in this campaign. There is a fallacy that continues to be presented to the public about Mr. Ellis and his close, almost victory over Mayor Jennings. The fact of the matter is, Corey Ellis lost that election by 12 points, fixed it 56 to 44. I don't know what event or sports or anything that you're judging that by, but a 12-point loss is not almost defeat. Almost defeat for the mayor. That's a sound victory for the mayor. So we need to dispel that fallacy. He did not almost beat the mayor. He was soundly defeated
by
the mayor.
Okay, we want to stick to the point.
I just want to clarify that. As far as the issue of speeding in the streets, as you know, Dr. Shartok, I attended a forum here on that very issue. And I've been, if you know, in the community, I've been working on that issue in the community. I just spoke last evening at the Common Council regarding the reduction of the speed limit.
Okay, that's it. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
And I know that Joe Sullivan wanted to make a remark. Was it? No, it was not. It was
Jesse.
Okay, Jesse.
Yeah. The question was sustainability and transportation, right?
Yes.
Okay. I think long-term, we really need to embrace the emerging technologies there. We're dependent on fossil fuels for our technology, but with Tesla Motors and everything that's emerging, I think we really need to link our transportation to renewable energies for the long-term, and that will make us a much more independent city so that if prices of fossil fuels do go up in the future, which seems like is the case that's happening, that we'll have our bets hedged against that occurring and be ready to adapt to that climate.
Kathy?
Yes.
Question on sustainable economic development. Thanks to the State University, Albany is becoming an economic center of high technology development. Yet downtown Albany remains distressed, property values are stagnant, and most of the benefits of nanotech research go elsewhere. How will you make the city of Albany more attractive to individuals and families attracted to the area by the high-tech economy?
Cities really are the place of the future, and this is going to be the century of cities. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that we know that cities are places that we can make sustainable, where you can reduce your carbon footprint, where if you have plans around transportation, around community, and around building walkable, livable cities, that we will be successful because there is a demand that exists for living in cities. And so it's all about making sure that we move beyond the planning stage. In Albany, we have lots of plans and they sit on shelves and they collect dust. And it's very important to make sure that we move to the next step and have the ability to actually execute. And so an example of that, we talk about light rail and it's wonderful to dream, but we can start with car sharing. We can start with fueling stations that allow people to plug in electric vehicles. And when we focus on executing on a strategy and chunking it down into actual accomplishable goals, then we can rebuild our downtown. We can rebuild our neighborhoods. And we can fulfill the promise of this being the century of cities right here in the city of Albany. And so my approach would be to use the practices and the experience that I have to ensure that we have the people in place, the leadership in place, and the consensus in place to execute on all of the plans that we know we can accomplish in downtown. It's a matter of focus, and it's a matter of taking it seriously and ensuring that we're able to execute on those plans.
Marlon?
Yes, I agree with Ms. Sheehan about leadership when it comes to creating economic stability in this city. Economic stability is key to creating municipal sustainability. And when it comes to plans in the city, as you spoke of, I have worked on more city plans than anyone on this dais. I have here a copy of an article from 2003 in the Times Union when I was working on the Arbor Hill Revitalization Plan. And I quote here that there's been countless initiatives, countless renovations in the hill, but we still have boarded up building. And I'm quoting myself here. I spoke about how we need to get real jobs and real businesses in this city, not just the ones with ones and twos. And what we need to do, what this city has not done, is adequately market itself for business. We've been so focused on the high-tech theater that we've forgotten that we need real jobs for real people. Everyone's not going to get a high-tech job. Everyone's not going to be a small business person. We need jobs. Jobs, jobs, jobs.
Thanks. And I think we have a question from Jesse.
Oh, just a comment on that. I think one of the ways we do it is by providing incentives like lowered property taxes in the region so that we really have a reason to draw new businesses in and create a friendly business climate. I know the cabaret law kind of has created somewhat of a hostile business climate for certain businesses. Beside that, I know we have the Albany 2030 plan going. I think it's a pretty good idea. And I think that Kathy mentioned consensus, and then on the same hand, Mayor Jennings issued an executive order for sustainability. So I think as we go forward in the consensus, I think we need to make sure that the process is democratic, is open, and there's transparency so that we don't run the risk of it being a kind of a manufactured consent, so that we have a true democratic consensus and that the people are a very strong part and that it's not a government decree like an executive order.
Corey?
Yes. When we talk about sustainability, we continue to talk about downtown. I know that downtown, with the type of leadership, will grow and it will change. But when we're looking at sustaining a city, the neighborhoods are the focus. The neighborhoods have to be revitalized. And when we talk about revitalization, those neighborhoods, we're talking about walking neighborhoods, environmentally free neighborhoods, but also neighborhoods where we have small businesses that help sustain that neighborhood. When we look at sustainability continuously in our most depressed neighborhoods, we talk about economic development, but we don't talk about the small businesses that can help sustain those communities and make it possible to own homes. In the process of owning those homes, we create and sustain a city. We have to look at other cities. Let's look at Detroit. Their process of building up their downtown was ballparks and amusement, things of that nature. But people still left Detroit.
Joe?
A couple of key factors in the sustainability of downtown and rebuilding downtown. Number one, you've got an aging infrastructure. And you've been hearing about that lately in the paper or in the media with the sewer tops popping out. And you've got an aged sewer system and a water system. So if you're going to have sustainability, you've got to figure out how can we replace the existing utilities down there, modernize them, bring them up to date. A second factor, we've got to get rid of that monstrosity of an elevated highway system around and get access to the waterfront in the Port of Albany before an earthquake actually takes that system down. So those are two very expensive projects, and we have to figure out how we're going to pay for them.
We're going to ask that we limit ourselves, if it's okay with everybody, to one response per talk. So you'll get another chance in just a moment.
I appreciate it.
Okay. Last week, the Attorney General announced a $20 million competitive grant program for the state's 8 land banks. Despite the attempt of local advocates, Albany is not utilizing this new tool and may not be eligible for the first round of grants. How do we make sure our city doesn't fall behind other New York cities that will be receiving this funding and have coordinated agencies to revitalize vacant and abandoned property? Let's give that one first to Kathy.
Well, I have been advocating for a land bank since the state authorized the land banks through legislation and worked very closely with members of the community to build support for that. It was something that was supported by our county executive and by Mayor Jennings. And unfortunately, the legislation did not get through the county legislature. I believe that they are looking at it again. But land banks are one tool. There is no one panacea that is going to fix the vacant and abandoned building issues that we have in the city of Albany. But land banks are a critical tool because they allow us to take property out of the foreclosure cycle, where it goes to the highest bidder, and put it into a land bank that has community input, where communities and neighborhoods can decide the future of their neighborhoods and plan for redevelopment. And that redevelopment creates local jobs using local materials. And one of the objections to the land bank was, we don't have the money. And I kept saying, the money will come. The state wants to incentivize this. And by the way, we already spend $1 million a year tearing down buildings, boarding them up, and doing debris cleanups on vacant and abandoned properties. So let's step back from that and figure out a way that we can spend that money and actually accomplish what we all want, which is revitalized, healthy neighborhoods throughout our city, every single neighborhood in our city. And so I'm hopeful that the county legislature will now move forward. There is an opportunity for us to join the Schenectady Land Bank, which already exists, which I believe will be renamed the Capital Region Land Bank, so that we can actually even benefit from a regional approach and learn from one another and build on the ideas that are happening in other communities to resolve this problem that plagues many of our urban centers. So I'm optimistic. I'm thrilled that the Attorney General has seen the promise of these land banks and that he's dedicating money towards it.
Corey Ellis?
The initiative did fail, as we all know, and I like the process of a regional land bank. I do. When people who put that legislation together, my first question when they did try to come to the community was, Schenectady, they have a land bank. Why aren't we teaming up with them? Why aren't we making it a regional land bank? So I'm glad the second go around now, we're looking at teaming up with others who have a land bank and making it a regional land bank. That should have been the first process, not trying to start our own and start from scratch. We could have partnered up with existing land banks and made it a regional land bank. So I'm glad that now we're talking about partnering up with other regions.
Marlon?
Yes. I disagree with the land bank concept as a whole. Again, speaking as someone who has worked on more revitalization and development projects than anyone on this dais, it's just a rehashing of the same old formulas. Again, and speaking about partnerships, I don't believe that with the majority of those resources being located in the city of Albany, that they should be intertwined or overseen by county authorities. One of the problems of the lack of sustainability in the city as it stands now is because the county has too much influence and oversight over city issues. And revisiting the other point, trying to create a sustainability in downtown Albany cannot be created by thinking of such far-flung ideas as creating an aquarium. That's not the way to sustainability. We need real development, real jobs. But I do not subscribe to the land bank. I have a better plan. If you visit www.facebook.com/MayorMarlin2013, you can learn about my vacant buildings program. It's a much better plan than the land bank.
Thank you, Marlon.
Thanks.
Mr. Sullivan?
Yes. I think we have to go very slow with land banks. If you look across the nation, they're fraught with ineptitude and corruption. And I'm frankly tired of the state of New York and the federal government using our tax dollars, dangling them in front of us in the form of grants so that we do what they want us to do. I favor more local autonomy. We'll solve our own problems.
Hear, hear.
All right. Marcia, up to you now.
Okay. Corey, the city of Albany was born as a riverfront town, but now lacks adequate access. While the pedestrian bridge over I-787 and other improvements have been made in recent years, we lack the access that many desire. What is your vision for the waterfront and for the aging I-787 corridor?
Well, I know my vision is my vision of many people who continue to study this issue about making our riverfront access accessible. And I think we can do it. We bring in enough people, enough players to really say, okay, this is the direction we want to go. For far too long in this city, as I left the meeting this morning, the concept of things that can't be done continue to permeate in our city. We can do many things. And the concept of where's the money going to come from? Where's the money going to come from? There is money. There's money when we want to do things. When we want to start a war, there's money to pay for a war. When we want to cut back on those most vulnerable, we do that. So this riverfront idea is a great start. There's many people out there who are advocating for more access to our riverfront. And I believe if we're going to change that riverfront, it's going to be in a collective effort, especially with our congressional leaders. A city can't do it. The financing is too big, so we will definitely need a large congressional support to make that happen.
Jesse?
Yes. The riverfront, it is a beautiful area, and I think it should be utilized a lot more. But currently, our financial situation, I think the city currently borrows around $15 million from the state per year. So I think the money can't necessarily come from the city, but on a on an individual level from the grassroots, I think development could be encouraged for sure. And I'd just like to see the space used more, maybe movies, a movie night down in the by the river and things like that, I think are useful. But encouraging development from people maybe other than us.
Marlon?
Well, yes. What's got to be understood in any development, this city desperately needs jobs, real jobs for real people in the city of Albany. And I don't think that the development ideas of many on this dais are going to fit that program. Again, we've had the idea advanced about having an aquarium on the riverfront. How many marine biologists are in the audience? Anybody? Is anybody in the audience qualified to work in an aquarium? Those are the type of jobs that we don't need. We need something on the riverfront that's going to create jobs for the individuals in the city that lack them. Something real. I envision working with the Convention Center Authority to try to create a convention center hotel, and perhaps if we can get access to it, a casino on the riverfront, something that will create permanent and sustainable employment in the city. We need valid planning. We don't need these type of plans that are not going to serve, that we've had this for almost 20 years in the city of Albany.
Kathy?
Yes. The riverfront is a tremendous resource for our city, and I view it as a recreational resource first and foremost. And it is underutilized as a place of recreation. So I think if we start by looking at the grant that we currently have from the Regional Economic Development Council and talk about building a boathouse, not a bar, and developing the waterfront for recreational purposes that everyone can use, that the development that comes from that and the vitality that comes from that will help to grow our downtown, will help to create jobs, and it helps us to build on that strength. And yes, we need to plan for the obsolescence of 787. We need to start now. Other municipalities have done it, other cities have done it. Sometimes it takes a long time, but that doesn't mean that we don't do it. So we start now to work with the DOT and plan for the obsolescence of 787 so that someday we can all say, what was that road, Joe?
I think the Hudson River is America's Rhine, and we have to redevelop our riverboats, bring tourists up. The waterfront, you need a Quincy-type market. And also, you need money to do a lot of these other things. So let's put a refinery in the Port of Albany to refine the Bakken oil that's coming in there now and being transshipped down the Hudson to other places, and use that money to increase our tax base.
Okay, next question. It's a very important question. Will you support the legalization of chickens in Albany? Marlon Anderson?
Well, that's an issue that I have worked on and been involved in. As if you are familiar with the issue languished for almost a year in the Common Council, something that shouldn't have been done. It should have had an immediate up or down vote. I don't subscribe to the premise of animal husbandry in the city. There's a reason why our ag tech schools are located far away from city centers, why SUNY Colville School is in Colville, why SUNY Delhi is in Delhi, why SUNY Farmingdale is in Farmingdale, because a city and country, animal husbandry and cities, never the twain should meet. Because again, that's just a disaster waiting to happen. With things like avian flu out there, all we need is one chicken to be butchered and presented in some restaurant and cause an accident, and that'll be the end of that. So I don't subscribe to animal husbandry in the cities.
Jesse?
I feel that anything that can foster local independence and local food growing is good, but you have to provide an appropriate way to do it and guidelines that you can do it under. And I think there needs to be appropriate space, and if there's a noise concern with the chickens, that you have appropriate housing for them so that it's not a problem. But you know what I mean? But I think, by all means, that's something we should look at and encourage local and local food growth and use.
Kathy Sheehan?
Again, the century of the city. We all need to eat. We all need access to fresh foods. And I think the more ideas that we have about urban farming and access to fresh foods, whether it be through community gardens or responsible collecting of eggs from chickens in people's backyards, we have to be willing to embrace change. Of course, we need to have guidelines around it. Of course, you don't want to risk people and the public health. But come on, we are a city full of smart, creative people, and this is part of the excitement of why people are excited about cities again. And so I want to look at this as part of an overall broader strategy for access to healthy foods, access to the people who live in our city to be able to interact with community gardens, with the environment, for our children to learn about animals and where food comes from. So I think that we've got to be broad-minded about it.
Joe Sullivan.
I'm not going to chicken out on this one. I think you could approach the problem. We do have to grow some of our own food. I'm in favor of homeowners growing some of their own vegetables in their backyard, getting off the lawn chemicals, and eating healthier that way, composting some of their own materials, the leaves and so forth. But maybe the solution lies to this question in zoning and earmarking. Over in Ireland, where my people come from, they have a commons on the mountain, and all the sheep graze during the season on the slopes of the commons, and then they bring them down in the wintertime. So maybe zoning one part of the city, like the Normansfield Farm, and then people that want to raise chickens would have access to raising the chickens there. There has to be also very strict health regulation, because there are a lot of diseases that can be spread through fowl and birds. So I think it's possible, but we have to approach it in a designated area.
I agree with Joe.
Corey?
I definitely agree with Joe on that issue. It has to be a designated zone area because of the things that can happen. And because of other neighbors, you know, we don't want to pit neighbor against neighbor against neighbor. So we definitely need an area that is zoned for that purpose. And once you do that, you eliminate this fight that went on with this chicken ordinance that happened, I think it was 2 years ago. So I agree with Joe 100%. We want people to grow their own food. We understand that, but it definitely needs to be a zone purpose area for that.
Marlon, we already had you once on this, so we'll go to the next question. Okay. So
I just wanted to say that everybody agrees with Joe, but I'm the one that said that.
Okay.
So actually, they're agreeing with me, not Joe.
Marcia?
Yes, Joseph Sullivan. We talked earlier about access to the waterfront, but what will you do to improve the quality of the water at the riverfront? A recent Times Union article indicated that at the Albany rowing dock, for example, the bacteria levels were 13 times federal safety limits.
And you address that to whom, Marcia?
Joseph Sullivan.
Well, improving water quality is a tough issue there because you do have sewage overflows upstream. If you've ridden along 787 on a summer's night, you can get the odor coming over from the treatment plants overflowing along Troy and those areas, Rensselaer. And it's a real problem. I'm opposed to the dredging that's going on because all we're doing is stirring up at a great cost all of those sediments which are now in the water as well, all the way downstream. So we've got to realize that we're not going to clean up the water and make it as pristine as it used to be. We're going to have to live within certain problems and deal with them, but we can do a lot if we work at it carefully and think of what we're doing. All that money that was spent on the dredging could have been put into the infrastructure rebuilding in the city and improving the waterfront.
Kathy, I think you have a response.
Yes, this is an issue that is currently one that we are working regionally on, and the water quality is going to directly impact our ability to develop that waterfront for recreational purposes. We have an aging infrastructure, but so does Rensselaer, so does Troy, so do a number of the river communities. And so this is an area where regionalization is going to be essential. We're going to have to work together because we all impact the river in similar ways, and we can put together a plan, and if we approach it regionally, we can then, I believe, be far more successful in getting the resources that our aging urban centers need to rebuild. We subsidized the suburbanization of this state and this country through the creation of the ability to put in infrastructure in our suburbs. It's time for us to do that for our cities. It is time for the cities to get their fair share so that we can rebuild our infrastructure.
Marlon?
Well, the issue of the river has been an issue that's been around for nearly a century now. The river has been befouled by the continuing expansion of the cities in the region. But we have the technology. If we can clean up the giant oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico that we cleaned up a couple of years ago, we have the technology to clean the river. But we have to have leadership in place who is actually going to go out to places like Washington and present these ideas, actually going to go up to Capitol Hill. I have relationships on Capitol Hill with people like Governor Cuomo, with people like the Black and Puerto Rican Caucus, with people like the Latino Caucus, that I can go up and advance these ideas and get them pursued. The river can be clean. The technology is there. We can get it done. We have partners in the high tech up in SUNY and RPI. We can get it done, but we need the leadership to do it, the leadership and the vision. And I believe I have that leadership and vision.
Jesse?
To me, dredging the river is kind of a chopping off the leaf of a weed to get rid of the problem of the weed. You want to get to the root of the problem. And I think it is like a lot of the panelists are talking about, is our infrastructure and our energy, and it's not efficient, it's not clean. And so I think the model for success there is to be the beacon of hope that changes the infrastructure in an economically sound way. For every dollar that we pay for an electron, you spend three more to send it through the wires attached to the poles. So if we start developing on-site, clean, efficient energy, then we can, the pollutants won't be going into the river to begin with. If we can set that economic model for clean, efficient energy locally, then it'll spread out. We just have to, you know, it's like in my preschool classroom, I say, who's going to go first? That's what you want to happen. Who's going to be first to make the changes we need to make for clean, efficient energy? And then it spreads, especially when it's economically viable.
Corey.
Yes. I just want to bring to this old infrastructure topic where I've talked about this a number of times on my campaign trail about accountability. These projects that we want to do, these projects that are so dear to our heart, our water flow, our energy, and our old infrastructure, those are projects that a mayor of the city can envision and put out the vision for. But it is going to take our United States Congress and our United States Senators to make it happen. People, let's be clear, it's going to take our United States Congress and our United States Senators to make it happen. Cities cannot afford to do those projects. So when you're looking at a mayoral candidate, you have to look at a mayoral candidate who is going to be likely to go up to our Congress and our senators and say, this needs to happen. And yes, if we put it in a regional approach, it's more likely to happen. Our congressman, I believe, represents Schenectady, Troy, and Amsterdam, and parts of Clifton Park as well. If that congressperson is putting together a package for infrastructure for that region, it gives it a bigger push. So that's what we got to talk about when we talk about how we make these things happen. It's about accountability.
Okay. The cost of electricity continues to rise in our region and increasing operating costs for government and business. What will it take to make Albany a less energy-intensive city, both with respect to the operations of city government, local businesses, and city residents? Will you create and implement an energy descent action plan? What steps will you take to divert more waste from the landfill? Will you be willing to implement a citywide kitchen composting project? And Corey, as long as you were last up, why don't you become first up on this?
Absolutely.
How many questions was that?
That's like five. But I'm going to take them into one specific piece.
As long as he takes 2 minutes.
Right. I believe we have an opportunity. The last piece was composting. I was excited when I was on the council about composting. I believe if we start with small composting projects and get people more in tune to what composting is. And I always say we start in our schools. We really start in our schools about how we begin the process of composting. And that gives you a platform to move forward. And then you might want to move to our local businesses and how they're composting. But when we talk about the cost of energy and things of that nature, once again, we're getting back to when you want to make something energy efficient, there's going to be a cost to that, people. And we all know that. The city's budget is tight. So when you're looking at how do we make more energy efficient cars, how do we make more, these are city cars, how do we make more efficient city buildings when make them more energy efficient? It's going to take federal dollars. Let's make no mistake about it. It's going to take federal dollars, and it's going to take a city looking at grant opportunities that are out there. It's a focus that has to happen. If you don't have the focus and the passion to do it, it will not happen. And I have the focus and the passion to make sure that our city becomes energy efficient, and also our buildings and our cars become energy efficient. And that's what it's going to take. So I think I answered most of that question. I hope I did.
You'll have another chance.
Thank you.
Kathy Sheehan?
The city embarked on an exercise to focus on its own energy efficiency. I believe it was in 2010. It was shortly after I got into office, and there was a whole process that all the departments went through, and then that plan sort of stagnated, and we need to, again, dust it off and execute. This is a plan that demonstrated how we pay for it, and we don't necessarily need to go to the federal government to get them to pay for it. Many of these energy efficiencies will pay for themselves, and the question is how we finance it. And so there are many municipalities throughout the country that are finding ways to finance those cost savings and are seeing incredible success. So we have the plans. It's a matter of being willing to take the leadership and walk through the process and execute on it. And we've got to get the low-hanging fruit where we can fund things ourselves. And again, yes, we do have to look for grants and look for other ways to fund this, but that's no reason not to start now.
Marlon Anderson?
Yes. Firstly, when it comes to us going, who is going to be the one to go for it and reach the congressman, if you've seen any of my campaign literature, you know that there's a fact that I'm known for going up to congressmen, approaching them for city issues, pushing for things like jobs and things of that nature. As far as the waste issue, simply put, we need to find a more efficient way. And speaking about energy efficiency, I'm the only one on this dais who's actually had a hand in creating an energy efficient building in this city, the Arbor Hill West Hill Library. I'm the only one on this dais who fought for the funds to create that building when the public was not willing to support it. I went out and fought to create that building. That is an energy efficient building. That's the perfect example of what can be achieved in the city of Albany. And that building was achieved without federal funding, without having to do what the things Mr. Ellis spoke about.
Yes,
so
sir.
It can be done.
Okay. Jesse Calhoun?
Yeah, I definitely think a priority should be to look towards independent people taking an economically viable choice. Leasing solar panels was one big idea that was coming up recently. I think that's a great way to make it financially easy to make the change to clean, renewable energy, where we don't have to spend the money. And like I said before, we're borrowing $15 million from the state. So if we're going to be independent, it's going to have to happen on a very grassroots level, because if that supply of money ever comes off, if they drive off the fiscal cliff, I don't want to drive with them, you know?
Was it Joe Sullivan?
We can get some cheap energy pretty quickly, because I'm really tired of people running to the federal government and the state government to solve all our problems. Let's start to solve our problems. Let's get their mandates. If the congressmen and the senators want to do something on the federal level, state level, get these mandates off the backs of local governments so we can be more creative with what we have to work with. Now, we have a source of cheap, clean energy that's coming through pretty soon, and it's going to be built right through Albany. We should insist on tapping into that 765 hydropower line that's coming down from Quebec to New York City. Use that energy. And also, a lot of people don't want to hear this, we've got to drill for gas. That's cheap energy. So there are two sources of really inexpensive energy.
Did we get everybody? Good. Okay.
Okay. The Albany 2030 Comprehensive Plan calls for a preservation plan for the city. Jesse Calhoun, what are your thoughts on that, and how do you see it fitting into the sustainability initiatives that are already in place?
Basically, like I said before, as we go forward in the process of gathering consensus from the community, my main concern is that we just keep that very democratic, keep it open, and keep it transparent so that it is a true consensus and not top-down control.
Corey?
I believe the 2030 plan was a consensus of people coming to the table on weekends and weeknights and hashing that plan out. The only thing I can say about it was long, 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 long overdue.
Marlon.
Again, I am the only one on the dais who has worked directly with the architects of the 2030 plan, who has been consulted by the architects of the 2030 plan. And the plan is a very expansive one. And when you have an expansive plan of that nature, there are some things that you have to take a step back from and look at with an unjaundiced eye. The 2030 plan has a lot of good ideas, but it has a lot of ideas that need to be scaled back. And again, we're talking about a plan that's going to take place 15 years from now. I think we have issues in the city that need to be addressed now, and we need leadership in the city hall that is going to address them.
Mr. Sullivan.
The sustainability of Albany is really tied to the sustainability of America, and if you haven't looked at it lately, we're losing our country. The ineptitude of the president and the Congress, they're destroying us. And there isn't going to be any 2030 plan if we don't get our act together and start influencing the people that represent us in Albany and Washington to do our wishes, not us do their wishes.
Kathy Sheehan.
The 2030 plan was a wonderful process that really brought out the stakeholders of the city. And I know I, for one, spent hours on that plan and also commenting on that plan as it was in draft form in my role as city treasurer. And that plan does have many, many strategies. We need leadership that is going to build consensus around where we're going to focus our energy, the first strategies that we're going to tackle, and then actually execute on them. And the plan provides us a platform for doing that. We don't need to reinvent anything. We need to look at what and listen to what people said. Listen to what they said and execute on it. That's what we need to do throughout our city government. We've got to refocus our city government and the efforts of all of our dedicated, hardworking employees on what we say we want. And by we, I mean those of us who live in this city, who love this city, and who want to see our neighborhoods flourish.
Corey Ellis.
I have to respond. I said I wouldn't respond to him, but I have to respond in a polite way. For some reason, Marlon Anderson believes he was the only person at all those meetings, and I don't know why. When we talk about the 2030 plan, and I said it was long, long overdue, and part of that long overdue was having citizens sit down at a table of different neighborhoods. Albany consists of 28 different neighborhoods, but having all those neighborhoods sit together and look at maps and go through maps and say, this is not correct, this needs to be here, and look at how their possibility of their community changing over the next 10 years and having an input in that. So I think the 2030 plan was a great step in showing and giving the citizens in the city of Albany a legitimate voice on how their city may look in 30 years. We know the plan will be tweaked, but it was the first major step of city residents coming together in one room and talking about how they look, how they view their city in the next 20 years.
If I can rebut that, since it was directed at me.
No.
I think everybody's had a chance to speak on this topic, so we're going to move it along. Yeah, and the president has just announced a major initiative to control carbon emissions. Kathy Sheehan, what is your plan to reduce carbon pollution in the city of Albany?
Well, I am thrilled that the president has put this back on the front burner and that this is going to be an issue that we talk about again. So we can start by really there are two issues here. right? One is, how do we reduce our carbon emissions and what efficiencies can we put in place in order to slow down global warming? And the other thing, though, that a mayor must be able to do is deal with the reality that our climate is warming. And we've started by doing a vulnerability assessment to look at where are we vulnerable? What is going to happen in our city as we see more high temperatures, longer heat waves, longer and more intense precipitation events? Who are the vulnerable people that we need to look at, and what do we need to have plans for? So while we are reducing our emissions by becoming more energy efficient, by promoting far more walkability, public transportation, you know, a number of, again, plans that exist that need to be implemented, we need to make sure that we are identifying our vulnerable populations who are going to be impacted by the lower water quality that comes with higher temperatures and more precipitation events, with our elderly and our young people who are impacted by high heat. What are we going to do? What measures are we going to put in place? Where are we going to send people when we have a 100-degree heat wave for 6 days? How are we going to serve that population? And so we need to be planning for that now, and we need leadership who recognizes it and who's going to make sure that every project that gets done in this city and everything that we do going forward takes into account not only the economic impact of it, but the environmental impact of it and the social justice impact of those projects.
Marlon Anderson.
Yes, I agree with Machine about going forward. But we have to address the facts of the matter. And going back to what Mr. Ellis said earlier, it's not that I think these things, Mr. Ellis. It's a fact that, like I said, and I don't want to be misquoted, I said I was the only one who was consulted directly by the 2030 planners' dais, and I was. Now, as far as going forward with trying to reduce the carbon footprint, while it's true we have to address all those issues that Ms. Sheehan go on, the biggest issue we have with air quality and things like that is the continuing expansion of the city landfill. And it is a fact that the city treasurer supported the expansion of that landfill when the entire city was against it. So that's not going forward. That's continuing in the same status quo. We need to address, in the city, we got to do things like create incentives to pursue public transportation. We have a high rate of commutation in and out of this city, and that is directly affecting the air quality in the city. We
Jesse
have to better incentivize.
Yeah. I think we are all carbon emitters, are we not, with carbon dioxide is what we breathe out. So I think an initiative to make politicians talk less and listen more would be great. No, all joking aside, I think climate change is a reality, and we need to address climate change by addressing our infrastructure. Hurricane Sandy was a huge wake-up call for this, because we saw how it's all a chain-linked infrastructure. That's why I feel that decentralized energy, on-site, clean, efficient energy is definitely where we want to go long-term, as far-sighted as you can go. You want clean energy locally to the source, and I think that will build resiliency of our energy grid, as well as just be beneficial to the environment, increase our air quality, which is huge. We want cleaner air, and I think the focus should be more on toxins, heavy metals, things like that are very important.
Joe Sullivan?
The president and the people who blindly follow him are really the problem here. His policies are wrong. We've got to really look at what he's doing. He's not building the pipeline, approving the pipeline from Canada. He wants to raise our utility rates. He even said it before he ran for office, that we're all going to pay more for electricity. That's not the way to go. So I think we have to look very carefully at what's going on in the federal government in particular. And 2014 is your chance to change all that.
So let's go to Marlon Anderson.
Yes,
and,
please.
And ask you this question. Maybe the second greatest city in New York is New York City, and I wanted to ask you, has the departing mayor of New York City done anything that caught your eye in terms of sustainability that we should replicate here?
Well, it's hard to speak in good terms of Mayor Napoleon, because he's had a Napoleon complex down there, but he has done some good things when it comes to sustainability. I particularly like what he's done with the public areas in New York to create more pedestrian space. I think that was a very good development. It has increased the quality of life. It has increased improved the air quality in the city of, New York. And that, if anything, I would say would be that the increased use of public space for the public as opposed to traffic. So I like that, what he's done. And that's about all I like about what Bloomberg has done.
Kathy Sheehan?
Well, the mayor embarked on Plan YC back in 2007, and that grew out of a realization that they saw the demographics of the population growing by about 1 million people by, I believe it was 2030. And the mayor recognized that there was no plan in place to deal with that growth in population and to do it in a way that was sustainable, that took into account the environmental impacts of that. And so that is a plan that is reported on every year, that is it is provided the framework for the decisions that have been made about planning and about what the city is doing going forward. It's not perfect, but it certainly is an interesting model to use when we talk about trying to make sure that what we do in our city is truly sustainable and takes into account, again, this sort of triple bottom line of the environmental, economic, and social justice impacts of what we're doing.
Jesse Calhoun, I think your hand is up. I'm not
sure. I thought Mayor Jennings made good use of the green spaces around and provided some. I think Washington Park is a beautiful resource that, when it's utilized, is very good. I think we could utilize it more to generate revenue for our city by maybe holding more big concerts there or just our arts events, things like that. I think those are good things.
Joe Sullivan.
Was the question in departing mayor of New York City or departing mayor
Wait,
of Albany?
Corey, hold on a second. Don't start giving him his minute till I tell you. Corey, I'm sorry. I called on you out of place. Go ahead.
Okay. I didn't know if it, I had departing mayor of New York City, not Albany. Correct?
That's what he said. He said departing mayor. He said the mayor Bloomberg.
Well, I agree.
Although that wasn't a bad question. Go ahead.
Well, he said Mayor Jennings, so I was like, departing mayor of New York City, I really like his strong stance on gun control. I think his leadership in that will make a major impact on how we deal with gun control within our inner cities. I think it's a strong stance that he took that was much needed, and I'm hoping that we continue to look at the trafficking of guns that comes through these neighborhoods, these most challenged neighborhoods. And so I applaud the mayor of New York City for really taking an aggressive approach on that, because if we're going to create a sustainable city, sustainable neighborhoods, the trafficking of guns throughout those neighborhoods where we know they're not made in those neighborhoods, so how do they get to those neighborhoods? And we know that the expense of a gun is very high, so how does that happen that these guns are in these most vulnerable neighborhoods? So I really applaud the mayor of New York City for really taking a strong stance on that issue.
Thank you, Corey. And Joe Sullivan?
I'm glad to see Mayor Bloomberg departing. I can't wait to see who the next mayor of New York City is going to be. It's going to be very interesting. But as far as, since Corey brought it up, you don't trample on the Constitution to take away constitutional rights of law-abiding citizens. What you do is you deal with the problem. It's not a problem of gun control. It's a problem of people control and self-control and getting after the people that are trafficking in these guns illegally and using them illegally.
Anybody else? Good. We'll move on.
On to the next question. Being conscious of the fact of sustainable improvements such as community gardens, green buildings, walkable neighborhoods often results in increased property values. How can these programs be promoted equitably in Albany and not result in the gentrification and displacement of low-income urban communities? And Corey, Ellis, you want to take that one?
Well, that's not a hard question. That's an easy question. It can happen. It's just about focus and leadership and making sure it doesn't happen. Our city will grow when we have neighborhoods that are mixed. We have to create neighborhoods where there's mixed housing. Even though the housing stock is high, but we have to make sure the income level in some of those neighborhoods where people who are median income can afford to live as well. So once you start creating those type of neighborhoods and you make it a part of your city plan, then it happens. This is not, I mean, that's not hard to prevent an area from being over-gentrified. The hard part is making sure that you have it in writing and there's a set plan that the citizens know what's going on and it happens. So that's really an easy question, but that's how you make
it happen. Okay, so responses to that easy question. Jesse Calhoun?
Yeah, I feel like the key to stopping gentrification and just the moving around of people as if they are inconsequential is to give them ownership of their community and give them ownership. If there is to be a bike path, they could communally help to make it and benefit and be compensated for the use of whatever area they're in, or find ways to really have all of our citizens invest in the ownership of our city and take pride in it. And I think we all deserve to feel like a part of our city and be someone who has a stake, has a claim to the city, has ownership, and helps develop these green spaces from a grassroots level.
Kathy Sheehan?
The city of Albany has a very high level of poverty, and we have high concentrations of poverty. And what we have seen is that our middle class has eroded. So we need to ensure that we are helping people who are living in our city in poverty to get the education, the job skills, and the ability to earn a living and sustain their families and grow in our city. So in addition to focusing on all of these important environmental and sustainability issues, we've got to recognize education is the path out of poverty. And we need to have a holistic approach and acknowledge that the responsibility for this doesn't stop at the schoolhouse door. We all have an obligation. The business community, the health community, our criminal justice system, we all have to recognize our role in making sure that every single child in this city graduates from high school ready for college and a career. That will bring economic development.
Joseph Sullivan.
I think one of the keys to improving our neighborhoods is through active citizen participation. I've been president of the Buckingham Pond Crestwood Neighborhood Association for more than a quarter of a century, and we've fought many land use battles. If you start at South Manning and New Scotland Avenue, the open space on the corner was the first thing we achieved. You look at the convent, it's still a convent and not an office building with a lot of traffic because we opposed that change. You go down to Crumkill and New Scotland Avenue, the green space and the trees, that's our accomplishment. Right across from Stewart's, the green space there, and then the big ones were the land conservation zoning of the golf course and also the creation of Buckingham Pond Park in 1994. Which was not a park before that time.
Marlon Anderson.
Oh, thank you. Very quickly, if you're going to applaud Mayor Bloomberg for his efforts on guns, Mr. Ellis, you should applaud me because I'm the only one on the dais who has actually held meetings in the community regarding gun violence. One of the panelists, Mr. White, attended that meeting, and he can verify that fact. And Mr. Sullivan, addressing the issue of guns in the community is not trampling on people's rights. It's common sense. And it's time that we use common sense to address that issue. Now, as far as going forward with addressing the other question that was meant, basically, we need to, if we're going to move forward in that vein to prevent gentrification, it's simple. We need to create jobs in the community. In this city, here's a fun fact for you. In the city limits of Albany, there is not one Olive Garden, one Applebee's, one 99 restaurant, none TGI Fridays, not one. Those are the type of employers that this city lacks.
Yes, sir. That's all the time we have for the Albany Mayoral Forum on Sustainability. Thank you to the candidates. Thanks also to our partners in this forum, the New York League of Conservation Voters Education Fund, and especially its president, Marcia Beistrin, today's co-moderator. Our engineer is Adam Claremont. Thank you to Kristen Gilbert and Dave Hopper at Master Control. Thanks also to Graham McKenna for keeping us cool and to the entire Linda staff. You can hear this program again at wamc.org. I'm Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now for the end of Midday Magazine.